We're drawing up plans, and right now, the NFL players are actually executing them together. Can they keep it up, and will it work? It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr. With you guys. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And we finally reached that point. For so long, we'd had this long runway for the NFL and the players to get things figured out. We thought maybe we'd get to avoid some of the ugliness that Major League Baseball went through, no. But knock, knock, guess who's at our door?
No, and the union, the players kind of acting like family, which is what this show is for the next week. Yeah. Just family, father and son show.
Just sitting in the basement where I grew up in.
Doing things we probably sat around and did without a microphone and camera in our face, huh?
Yeah, probably with a lot more yelling and with more of you usually at some point, because this was the one part of you doing the show for as many, you know, this time slot for as many years as you have. The alarm's been going off at, what, 4:15?
4:15.
For 22 years. And the product of that was every time that we would come upstairs, come home from something in the middle of the day, you would have like midday narcolepsy where at any point in during a conversation, you could just fall asleep for all the understandable reasons because you always fought nap time.
I did. I didn't want to take a nap during the day so I could go to sleep at a regular time at night. But if I sat in one spot too long, whatever I sat in just kind of sucked me in for some sort of nap.
It's like a shark. If you stop moving, you die. If you stop moving, you would immediately fall asleep.
Would have been absolutely brutal. But it is amazing what's going on. Nice weekend of sports. As I said, I watched a little Major League Lacrosse, MLL. We saw the memorial where John Rahm had an 8-stroke lead, a 3-stroke lead, a 5-stroke lead, which was really a 3-stroke lead. We'll get into all that fun stuff in a while as well. But boy, oh boy, we thought football had the longest ramp. Now they're short ramped up and not agreeing on a whole lot.
Yeah, no, and we had seen this before. J.J. Watt and some of the other players in the past couple of weeks had tweeted out a list of things they were still looking for from the league. Well, yesterday took an entirely different turn on this as we saw the whole host of the NFL stars, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Tyrann Mathieu, J.J. Watt, back in the fold again. A ton of names in this, all tweeting out at the NFL that we want to play. That was the rallying cry on all of this, the social media blitz of the players pointing out some of their grievances and tagging it with the hashtag we want to play in all this. It's kind of a coordinated shot, similar to what we saw with Major League Baseball's players. You remember with Mike Trout and Bryce Harper and all those players saying, let us play in that instance. A very similar tone in this one. And I think really well executed united front, which is something we're not always used to seeing from the NFLPA when it comes to issues with the league. I mean, look as far back only as this spring when they were doing it with the collective bargaining agreement, and you had public bickering amongst the players, differences of opinion being aired out, where at the very least now this is a united front.
I think I've grown in a way, and I think this was one of the last bastions, because when I started doing this, going from playing football to going into this, I was like one of those, you know, keep stuff in the locker room, you know, settle your differences amongst yourself, you know, talk to your rep, make your calls there. You don't have to make anything public, to what social media can do today. And I have almost begrudgingly, but I do understand it more now, using social media to your advantage when you use it correctly. Because you're right, when it was the CBA negotiations and you had player fighting player, you know, player on player criticism, you were gaining, not, you were actually hurting yourself. So they were not using that smartly at all. This, in a coordinated effort, and it seems Byron Jones was one of the leaders of this, the defensive back for the Miami Dolphins, because the one thing J.C. Treader, the new NFLPA president and the center of the Browns, has been doing, they've been having almost daily phone calls. He keeps everybody up to date on what's going on. So, and the players obviously are interested, invested in this. So this was a calculated move. They weren't asked to do it, but a player set it up. And what they did, though, and this was smart, they made sure through the union that what they were tweeting was factually correct. You know, so they weren't just out there kind of throwing stuff out where, you know, the old political fact check thing, and all of a sudden say, wait, they said that, and that's not true at all. So they were trying to do it the right way. And in this situation, it is going to put pressure on the NFL, because while fans aren't going to want to hear a lot of the minutia, we'll get into some of it, but we'll try not to dive too deep, because basically I don't think you care. You know, you just want to see football or don't see football, one way or the other. But this was, I thought this was a very good coordinated effort by the players.
And I think in avoiding doing that, the players actually gave themselves the best chance on this. Dan Graziano, our ESPN NFL insider, was on Sunday morning on ESPN Radio and talked exactly about why making this public was the right way to go.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know from talking to NFLPA people earlier in the week, they're trying to get some of their higher profile guys involved here publicly. And they were a little bit stung back in March when guys like J.J. Watt and Russell Wilson came out against the CBA while they were trying to get one done. So they're trying to make sure that people know that their guys are on board with their plan. And they're still looking, it seems from the tweets, for answers on testing frequency and opt-out clauses and all these things that they've been negotiating for the past week. And it doesn't seem like they're getting what they want. So take the fight to the public is not a bad play historically, and we'll see what comes of it.
And I think this is the interesting part. Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio is exactly what you talked about. This is a calculated move for leverage. They saw in the spring, man, when our high-profile players say something, it doesn't just exist on social media. Because a lot of people are like, Twitter's not real life. What's this going to do? This goes back to what Sean Payton would always say in, you know, when I was there for a brief moment in time, which is every time you tweet, you're tapping the microphone in your own personal press conference. Yep. So when these players say it on Twitter, it gets picked up by news outlets. It gets to all the places that traditional media would go because it's the biggest stars in the NFL doing it. And the PA saw that and said, man, that really kind of hurt our cause when you had all these players speaking out in different ways in the spring. What if we harness that power for something that would help all of us? Because what the NFL is good at when it comes to negotiations and labor is, you know, stringing it out over a long period of time, using their financial means, their business acumen against the players over a longer timeline. The NFL's really bad at being nimble. And we saw that when the NFL players released that video not long after the killing of George Floyd,
right,
where all of a sudden it's a very quick and pointed move by them that results in the NFL having to act quick, Roger Goodell having to act without even getting to vet this by all the owners in that situation. And so with this one, by being nimble, but by being united, the players can finally harness some of that power to try and get a message across in a way that's going to run on every network and in every paper today.
Well, you saw that the member of the baseball player said, basically, they had that, just tell us when and where to play. Tell us when to show up. You know, they got to the point where they were back and forth, and I think they got a little public opinion toward them when it was just like, okay, just tell us where we're going to show up, and we'll play. So, and I think this is along that same route. And I don't know, and it will. I think it will put some pressure on the NFL. Listen, there's pressure anyway because there are some things, maybe not as many as we think, that are still being negotiated out there, and we think they're hovered in on just a couple of things. There's a whole lot of things to be talking about, no doubt about that. But you do have rookies reporting today. There is that game September 10th against the Chiefs and the Texans. And today, those rookies from those two teams report. Now, veterans don't have to report until next Tuesday, so they have 8 days to kind of see how the rookies are treated. Here, rooks, go be the guinea pigs, and let's go see how you're tested and how it all works, you know, until we have to show up. While this week, they're still going to negotiate the rest of whatever they're negotiating and the testing aspect of those things, the opt-outs and all that. Like I said, we'll get into some of that, but I know most people don't care about it. The bottom line is they have to cross the finish line. And we were really like, uh-oh, with baseball. I mean, to where Buster Olney was saying 5% to start, 0% to finish. I don't think anybody ever thought that in football. And I don't think anybody really thinks it's that low now. I think these are all hurdles. These aren't the highest hurdles in the world, but they're still hurdles that need to be jumped.
Still hurdles that need to be jumped. We'll talk to our own Diana Russini in just a few minutes about some of these updates and what we can expect as the NFL tries to clear some of those hurdles going into the season. But coming up next, we had some baseball back last night.
Yes, we did.
We opened the door and it felt really good. We'll talk about why one country has shut that door firmly on the upcoming season. Major League Baseball was back on our television screens last night. And I'm not going to lie, it felt awesome. I was not like, we're not like huge baseball fans by any means, but I think you and I had the same reaction sitting around last night. Like something just felt right about having a really hot summer night out here with Major League Baseball on the TV.
And I didn't have a problem with, I'd love for fans to be at the game, but I mean, I didn't have a problem watching it with the seats being empty. That didn't really affect me. I was just watching the baseball. We were watching the White Sox and the Cubs. They broke a couple times at the Yankees and Mets where you saw Stanton and Judge both go yard. in that game. The Yankees got to be happy about that, that those guys are on the field with so many injuries they were dealing with. But, yeah, watching the White Sox and the Cubs and just watching baseball is a cool thing.
Where are you at in the crowd noise? The piped-in crowd noise has been interesting.
Oh, that's fine by me. I mean, again, you know, I guess a lot of it depends on the camera angles as well, right? If you see a picture with no stands, how quickly does your mind say, well, there's nobody in the stands yet, I'm hearing this crowd noise? Or do you just kind of get into the groove of saying this is what it is, just like the players do? All these players in different sports have done it with no fans. Now some fans are coming back, as like we've seen in NASCAR and such. But golfers, how used do they get it? How quickly do they get used to no fans? It's just like anything else. I'm used to not seeing fans in there in the stadiums. And the piped in music or noise, crowd noise is fine.
Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr. And I think I'm coming around to it because, you know, a lot of the sports that have come back right now are a little more passive watches. And so having it on where I can hear that noise, I'm sitting around, it feels normal in that instance, makes it feel a little more like what we were used to.
But you know what's pretty cool, though, is some of the Nat sound, you know, is hearing, like in MMA, you know, at the UFC fights, we were hearing the coaching. You know, we were hearing some of the chatter going on. We hear a little more in golf. There's something about that as well. Now, NASCAR, you know, the guys are in the car, so you don't really hear anything different outside of their spotters and them talking. But there is something to what you hear between the athletes and or the managers and coaches as well.
And we'll see if what they have eventually will get built into the broadcast as we go along here. There's plenty of time for that, but right now it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And there is one team that's looking longingly at this, I'm sure, and wondering just how the hell they're going to pull this off. The Toronto Blue Jays will not play their home games in Toronto this year. Canada's government doesn't think it's safe for the players to travel back and forth from the U.S., one of the countries that obviously the U.S. meaning being hit hardest by the virus. Immigration Minister Marco Mendocino said Saturday that the federal government denied the Blue Jays' request to play at Rogers Center, confirming what an official familiar with the matter had told the Associated Press ahead of that announcement. So Toronto's going to start their season at Tampa Bay on Friday, but is scheduled to play its first home game July 29th against the defending champion Washington Nationals. We know that now that will not be taking place in Canada.
And you know what? I hope nobody has a problem with Canada doing this. I mean, they're doing this what they feel is the right thing here.
People, you know, have a problem with you wearing masks to a grocery store. They're going to have a problem with this.
Come on. I mean, if you're trying to do the, remember, for the greater good here, not your baseball team, the greater good, you know, of the nation there, of to help there, not having really not so much, you know, I guess it would be everything, them being there and then traveling to the United States and then coming back, United States traveling in and then leaving right away. I get it. I mean, I get it, not wanting to take that chance. So they get sacrificed in this one, but they have places to go. They can go to their AAA affiliate in Buffalo. But it is a AAA. It's a minor league, because I heard one ball player say he wants to play in a big league park. Well, you know, we don't want COVID. I mean, I know what you want to do that, but nobody likes this situation. But they're in Dunedin, Florida, is where their spring training is, where that would be ready made down there. So that would seem to be.
And something they're used to, something
exactly
they've got familiarity
that
with.
That would, I think, under normal circumstance, well, in a normal circumstance, it'd be in Toronto, but, that would be the place to go, but we know Florida has been getting crushed with a lot of positive tests, and players are very fearful about going and playing and staying in a hot spot there. So, do we have another place? I mean, another place that hasn't been brought up yet, but they're going to have to figure it out pretty quickly.
They are going to have to figure it out pretty quickly. Our own Jeff Passan, our ESPN Major League Baseball insider, was on SportsCenter last night reacting to this news for the Blue Jays.
Public sentiment, Zubin, in Canada was strongly against the idea of having people coming back and forth, no matter how much you were going to bubble them in the stadium. They simply did not want to open the border and make their citizens more susceptible to contracting COVID-19.
Especially not for baseball. Like, I'd have to imagine, and I don't know Canada's fandom and proclivities like that, but we know a lot of people would, I think, at the first reaction go, well, you're doing hockey. They're doing hockey in a bubble. It's all up there on their terms.
Right.
It's completely different. And it's hockey in Canada. Like, you're talking about one baseball team of 30 that resides north of the border in that country. And you would be asking them to say, you know what, you're not comfortable with this, but risk it for the one baseball team that you guys support in a league that's largely south of your border on that one. Like, from a practical sense, if I'm Canada and trying to, like everyone else, mitigate risk,
yeah,
the last thing I'm going to do is open my border for, again, a sport where we are represented by all of, let me check notes, one team.
Yeah, this was a no-brainer decision, by the way. So where are they going to play? Well, Jeff Passan talked about that on SportsCenter as well.
In Buffalo, New York, is Salem Field. The problem with it is that the lighting in the outfield is substandard when it comes to making it look like a pretty TV product, and the clubhouses are small, and the Blue Jays are worried about social distancing inside of that. The plug-and-play option is down in Dunedin, Florida, where they hold their spring training. Everything is taken care of there. They know that they have the right facility. The problem, of course, is the outbreaks of the coronavirus in Florida have been much more significant, and there's some fear over that. Blue Jays president Mark Shapiro alluded to a potential third site. Wouldn't go into any details about that, but the fact is, we are less than a week from opening day. We are 10 days from the Blue Jays home opener, and like you said, no idea where it's going to be.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. He just said it there, 10 days from the home opener, and this is my one question to you is, do you think they were owed an answer on this earlier? There were a lot of people looking at this and saying, why did this decision have to come with such close proximity to the season?
I think this situation changes daily. And I think you were holding out hope. I believe they always felt it would probably wasn't going to happen. That's why they had other options in mind. But you want to see where everything's going. You know, would the curve be starting to come down in the United States? You know, where are we? Because it changes daily. So I think if we really, you know, started peeling the layers back, that we would have known they probably felt it wasn't going to happen. That it was not going to happen, and it would be a real turn in their favor if it would, but a low percentage. So I don't mind it being this late because I do believe, at least from management's mind, and whether they related to the players or not, we're probably not going to be in Toronto. We're working on things there, but it's not up to us. It's up to the government. And I think the way they're working up there and the way the United States is right now, I think they all had a pretty good idea that it wasn't going to be happening.
Yep, I was going to say, stating the obvious in this situation and having to make a difficult decision, and one that now, unfortunately, the Blue Jays are going to have to find answers to here pretty quick, like you said, probably been working on those or starting to for a little bit while now. All right, speaking of answers.
Oh, boy.
We're going to go looking for them in the NFL next. We're getting ready to reach the end of that NFL runway. We're going to talk to our next guest about how much turbulence we can expect at takeoff. That's back after this. It's Golic and Wingo. The NFL versus the NFL players yet again as we ramp back up to football. It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, SiriusXM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And let's go out there for our next guest, Diana Russini, our ESPN NFL reporter, who's going to get us caught up on this stuff. But first, Diana, I couldn't help but notice over the weekend, and I asked this because my dad is a recently converted golf guy. I saw you out on the course. Is this a new venture? How long have we been dipping into the world of golf? Because I saw you're putting your swing out there on Instagram, which is always a dangerous thing to do.
Yes, it is.
It really is. For somebody that's just played putt-putt her whole life and has now stepped up the game to actually try to learn the game of golf, I think it was a little too aggressive to put it out there like, hey, look at me. I really just wanted to show off like my new golf shirt, but I've now been sucked in. So I'm excited. I'm not good. I don't think really anyone is that good except unless you play professionally. But here's the one thing I learned, Mike. Everyone is very critical. Like, if you golf, you have something to say about everybody's swing, their stance, their look. I've never gotten so many comments. The picture I just posted was me swinging. Everyone's like, is that a backswing? What are you doing? Are you trying to knock down a tree? Are you trying to swing at a home plate? My feelings were hurt, to be very honest with you, with the way everyone just attacked me.
I've got to say, you had to know that was coming, Diana. I mean,
this is the internet. I mean, it's a terrible place.
Remember, everybody out there tweeting is a professional at what they do. So they know all out there.
So I feel like you have to pick one or the other. You either fish or you golf. So I've always been in the fish category because that's what my brother does, my father does, and that's just kind of the space I've been in. People that fish are really nice. The boating world is wonderful. I didn't know golf people were so mean. So I'm determined now, and I made a goal for myself. I'm going to play. I'm going to find some charity golf tournament, even if it has to be, you know, the putt-putt down at the Jersey Shore with the pirate ship somewhere that will let me play. And I'm going to win this thing. I'm going to win this thing for both of you, actually.
So first and foremost, Diane, I did not know you like to fish. I love fishing more than golf. We can go fishing anytime. I would dig that. And second, you said you posted that picture not for your swing because of the shirt you bought. Did you get any nice comments at least about the shirt?
Not one, actually. Not one person was like, the only person to reach out to me about it was my younger sister just texting me. It was like, your outfit is awful. But I said, look, I'm just trying something new here. And I'm really lucky because my friend Michelle Rosenhaus, who's also a producer on NFL Live, played golf in college. And she's a scratch golfer. So I'm actually coming to Connecticut this week. Because I'm hosting NFL Live in Bristol, and we're going to go play after those shows. So, look, my heart is in the right place, but I've been in sports long enough to know even though you want something so badly, it doesn't always mean it's going to happen. But, guys, I'm going to try, and I'm going to post about it, so watch out.
ESPN NFL reporter Diana Rossini joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on Sequence 4A wear testing using SAE 5W30. So Diana's PGA Tour hopes are off in the future. As you said, we all want something really bad right now. We'd like football, but we see it's going to be a little more complicated than that. So Diana, we saw the very pointed social media blitz from the players yesterday. What's been the reaction that you've heard maybe from the team side of anyone that you might have talked to on what we saw from the players yesterday?
Yeah, I've spoken to both sides, the players that were really frustrated yesterday because you couldn't miss it on social media, how, you know, we're talking superstars putting their thoughts out there because in their mind, they are comfortable negotiating here through the media. They are okay with the public knowing this is what's happening. We do not feel safe. We need something to change here. Obviously, the other side of this, talking to organizations, and when I say organizations, I'm meaning GMs and head coaches yesterday about their reaction to this. I'm sensing frustration. I'm sensing, some organizations saying that, you know, the players are asking for a lot. The fact that we've all had so much time and we haven't been able to come up with what can work. And there's a lot of different sticking points, but the one part that really stuck out to me, Mike, from talking to players, it was about the daily testing. That seems to be the part of this that players really want to have done during training camp. The other part of it is just the concern that their football shapeness, they haven't been out there together. They've all been working out individually, as we know. They feel like they're just going to need more time. They just want to get rid of preseason out of concerns of more serious injuries. So the conversations are going to continue between the union and the NFL. We know today that the Kansas City Chiefs, the Houston Texans rookies are all reporting today, despite the fact that nobody really has a plan of how this is going to work. I spoke to one source in Kansas City, on the coaching side of it yesterday, just kind of picking his brain of what are you expecting tomorrow? And he's like, I don't even expect to see the players. Physically, I don't, they'll be here, but I don't even know how much we're going to be able to interact and actually see. So, obviously a lot of question marks right now, guys, as we're just a few days away from when everyone's got a report on July 28th. I feel like that's the only thing I can tell you right now on this call is that players are reporting on July 28th.
So you've talked about the biggest hangups here. We read a lot of smaller things, but I agree. It does seem to be on those couple of things. Is the league still holding to testing every other day or every third day, and the players want every day? I mean, is that where the league is right now?
Yeah. At this point right now, they do not want to do daily testing. They do not think it is needed. Obviously, players feel the more testing, the more information they have, the safer they will feel going home to their families. Obviously, you guys have seen Russell Wilson's tweet about concerns that his wife is pregnant. And they all bring up really good points. But it just, from the sense I can tell and the temperature I can take, right now the league is not moving on it. So I don't know where this is going to go today. The conversations are going to continue, but it seems those preseason games and the daily testing are the things that, that players really want to see. But guys, remember, they have to show up. They have to show up on July 28th. So, you know, this could get really dicey as we get closer.
Talking to ESPN NFL reporter Diana Russini with us here on Golic and Wingo. And Diana, I guess that was my next question in all this is, does this have the kind of teeth as you've talked to players? Is there an idea or a thought that when that date comes, that especially because this movement seems to really be predicated on the high profile players being willing to speak, is there a chance that any of those same high profile players sound like they'd be willing to not show up and take some of the fines at the start of camp to make a point?
Yeah, I was trying to get some players to go on the record with me yesterday that the conversations are already starting. There's certainly been talks about it. I wasn't able to find anybody that could confirm to me, yes, we are planning on sitting out or I'm not showing up. But I don't know. I feel like we can read the tea leaves here that there's true, honest concern here about we're not talking football. We're not talking money. We're talking about health. And I don't think players are going to be willing to take those risks if they don't feel comfortable. You know, again, we still have a few days before they have to report. And I do think we're going to learn a lot through these rookies. That's something else, actually. A coach shared with me yesterday from the Houston Texans. We were just discussing how this is going to work. And, you know, he's like, we're worried that this isn't going to go that smooth with the rooks, that the veterans are going to see it, and then they're not going to want to get involved here. So there's still plenty of questions that need to be answered, but unfortunately, it seems like the rookies are going to be sort of the testing mice here in all this.
Yeah, they are. They're the guinea pigs. That's exactly right.
Which, if I'm a rookie, I'm looking at the PA like, you guys represent me too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking about that opt-out for $150,000 maybe at this point. So speaking of learning from Diana, I'm interested, and I asked Sam Acho this when he was on, and I'm not really sure that they did, given his answer. Learning from, there's two of the major sports that are in the bubble, hockey and NBA, and two that are out, baseball and football. And the second largest as far as players on a team is going to be baseball. And they're out of the bubble, and they're going now and getting ready to start their season. Has the NFL and or the union looked at what baseball is doing and use them as a template, both what they're doing positively and maybe some of the things that haven't worked for baseball? Has that been used as any kind of a guide at all?
No, it's a great, great question. And you know, I feel like a lot of people have been asking, why not just do the bubble? It seems to be working with the NBA. They're getting some traction here. We don't know if it's going to be successful. You know, and that was shot down weeks ago. I almost felt like everyone sort of just looked at that like, it will never work. But I did hear that during one of the NFLPA calls, you know, one of the players pointed to what's going on in Australia, and I thought it was really interesting. You guys see there, and rugby is probably the closest to what we see in terms of football, in terms of the contact. And they've been up and running for almost 8 weeks now, and they've been copying that NBA bubble sort of scenario, and they have a few of them. They don't just have one. They have, you know, I think three or four of them, and they've been going for a while now. So, and they've been safe. That's been, you know, obviously the best part of that scenario. So it sounds as if they should probably look at that, maybe copy some of that. But it doesn't seem, from what I can gather from the information and the people I've spoken to, that the bubble is on the table. It seems like that is just not going to be something they're going to do. They believe in education. They believe in testing and really trying to do their best in making sure the guys are safe at the facility, wearing masks, making sure their temperatures are taken and everybody, you know, wearing a mask at all times.
We're going to have to wait and see how this all starts to come together for the NFL. And hopefully they can emulate some of those things that have been successful and find their way to land this plane, as we've made a million runway references through all of this. Diana, you can check your Instagram. There's a wow, cool shirt comment
Oh boy.
That has just come your way. So we're finally going to get it the recognition it deserves.
Thank you for that. And also, you know, we were talking about the blitz of tweets from the players yesterday. I don't know where I was. I missed the blitz of tweets congratulating Mike on being a college football analyst and moving on from those early morning hours. Like, I completely missed it. And then it was so late. If I tweeted something or spoke about it, it would have just felt so disingenuous. So I apologize for not being able to put out what my honest thoughts are, which I've always enjoyed talking to you. You've always been so supportive, even going back to the days when I just started at ESPN and I didn't have a clue what I was talking about. So thank you so much for always being supportive and really always making me laugh as well. So thank you.
I have enjoyed our time together, and I look forward to fishing with you, by the way. I think that will be a lot of fun.
There we go. It's going to be a great day. Thanks,
Diana.
Did you
invite yourself?
Yeah, I did. Hey, listen, when you're 57, you just invite yourself to places. That's just the way it goes. Thanks, Diana. See you later.
Diana Rossini, ESPN NFL reporter.
I probably didn't ask that question correctly to her because the NFL is not going in a bubble. That's not happening. But I just wonder, you know, with baseball, because they're the same as the NFL, you know, outside the bubble, have anybody looked at that? Because that didn't start out so great with baseball and the testing. Remember, there were some facilities that had to delay opening because they weren't getting the test results back. And then they've done some good things, too. So I just wondered, why not look at their template of what they did, both good and bad, to form some of what you want to do? Because, you know, you're talking 90 players, maybe 75 players. You're talking 30 players that started on baseball. It's not as many, but it's still more than any other sport, and they're doing it the exact same way from their own facilities and travel.
And that was one of the, I think, tough parts that I said. If you were an NFL fan who didn't have much of an interest in Major League Baseball, you would have been right to be upset with them for the process and going about it the way they did, because it cost you the ability to see that sooner if you're the NFL, right? Like, all of that taking place later for Major League Baseball, as we've talked about, some of the difficulties surrounding the NFL and what they've been up against timeline-wise, I think that's one you can point to and say, if you were looking to try and maybe gauge your policy on what others have done, you lost a lot of that time period when Major League Baseball pushed back its start the way that it did.
Right, and then you wonder about, you know, football players wanting, and I don't know the logistics of this. If you do open camp with 90 players,
yeah,
and test every single day, you know, what's the groupings going to be? Are you going to have all 90 together? You're going to do it in groups. You have to have the rapid result, right? I mean, when I got tested before I saw my mother who had a surgery done, because I needed to get there kind of quick, and she's fine, by the way, everything is all good, I made sure I got a rapid test one. But they would all have to be that, right? If you're going to test every day, you can't say, well, we'll let you know in a day or in 8 hours, because then you're not doing anything, you know, you're not with them. So you would need, I found out, in like 15, 20 minutes. So you would need that every single day for 75 or 90 players and all the staff and everybody involved. I would imagine, again, I'm not an expert in this. Is this a doable situation to do it every single day? Certainly that would be the safest if you could, and you could do it every day and find out in 15, 20 minutes and then go about your day if everybody is negative.
Yeah, and I think especially for them during training camp seems to be right. The emphasis there, because you've got those expanded rosters. We know that BioReference Laboratories is going to handle the collection and analysis of tests for the NFL. We know that that's going to include the nasal swab test for the virus as well as blood tests for antibodies. This all according to some reporting from Dan Graziano back on Friday that we'll get into there, but nothing as far as that. Unfortunately, what I assume at this point, and this is also part of the moral problem for a lot of people, is because it's the NFL and they're important, they have a lot of money, they could have potentially better access to something like that, and they'll be getting the top notch stuff right in all of this one now. So one of the other things, I guess, that's come up and we've been trying to make sense of this morning is we've looked at the strategy from the players of going to social media and doing these things, why they've tried to bring this fight out publicly. And I thought Marshall Newhouse was interesting.
Yes.
Talking about this yesterday on game night on ESPN radio, really looking at this as why the fight goes to the public and why perception is such a huge part of this.
We just came off of a CBA negotiation. And in that CBA negotiation that's agreed to, I voted no on it. But, you know, the league was pretty much split. There was not an overwhelming majority or anything like that. But we agreed to the CBA. And in those stipulations, they made it the penalty for missing training camp practices. They made that penalty as harsh as it has ever been. And rolling that into these things, they understand that there's a certain amount of leverage that comes with that, mm-hmm. where, yeah, we can kind of drag our feet and take our time with this because we know guys have to show up or we're going to start taxing them. And there's only thing that we can say is that, hey, we just signed the CBA. So, yeah, they can kind of tax us. It's not right. You think with someone who has their best interest at heart, they wouldn't agree to that, but that's just not how this game works. So usually when things like that happen, someone's trying to be a little subversive and not give the full breadth of the situation. They're trying to withhold a little bit because this is eventually just a leverage game at the end of the day.
And Marshall Newhouse, free agent offensive tackle, decade-long NFL veteran, a guy who is very well-versed in this stuff. And so he's not surprised by what he sees in that regard to when it comes to the owners. But to be clear, that's what the players are doing on the other side as well. They're going to present things that are going to put them in the most favorable light here. The thing that's encouraging to me, and again, like we understand we skew player for obvious reasons on this show, but when you look at this objectively, the players are rarely this good and unified on the other side of aligning themselves with the fans like Major League Baseball did, trying to create that perception, because people always kind of bristle at the thought of millionaires and billionaires arguing. But now you're back on the side of, well, I'm concerned about my health going into this. I want to play. I want to get back to the game so that fans have that in all of this when you do that. And in the meantime, you present all the information and saying, here's what we're not getting, even though we know with this, it's a little more complicated on some of these issues than it is in being presented in all of this, because you only got so many characters
on Twitter. And also, let's not think that they just started making calls last week. They've been negotiating on things for a while that they've agreed to on some of this. There's just some of the bigger sticking points. One of it, if you read a lot of the players' tweets yesterday, was about the NFL not listening to its own medical experts. And the medical experts, the panel, had talked about a 48-day lead-up period, ramp-up period to start to play. And if you count the days, you look at when everybody reports, well, some rookies reported today for Kansas City and
for Houston, but the larger rosters, the veterans.
So it's July 28th, and then that first game is Kansas City and Houston, and that would be 44 days from July 28th. And then the first game for everybody would be 47 days. So that's right around the ramp-up time, 47 days that the doctors, this medical panel said, ramp up to play. And where the hang-up is those 47 days include, from the NFL side, two preseason games. And the players are saying, let's ramp it up and then start to play right in the first game with no preseason games. We don't feel we need them. We just feel that's a risk we don't need to take. So that's one of the sticking points. Again, there's a couple of major ones, some minor ones out there, but a couple of major ones, and certainly the preseason games is one of them.
Yeah, that seems to be the big crux of this. We'll get a lot more information on this with former NFLPA President Eric Winston at 7:30 Eastern this morning. Golic and Wingo's brought to you by Indeed. If the next step for your business is finding a high impact hire, try Indeed. Their flexible payment options mean better bang for your buck with no long-term contracts. Indeed will even give you the $75 credit for your first sponsored job post at indeed.com/high impact. Terms and conditions apply. And yeah, it seems in all of this, because we've seen J.J. Watt post that list with things a couple of times. And obviously, the focus, especially for what the players are going to talk about publicly, is health and safety. It seems to come down still with all of this to the main issues of daily testing, like Diana brought up, and the players not wanting to play preseason games. The structure of that ramp up seems to be what's in question here. And you can understand in both of those instances, because we had J.C. Treader on talking about the injury stats coming off the lockout year in 2011 and what that can mean. And certainly testing is at the heart of this. Like, we'll get to in a little bit, like Freddie Freeman from the Braves and what he's talking about having dealt with when he was sick with this virus. Or as a kind of a reminder of, this is what the players are worried about, themselves, their families, guys like DeMarcus Lawrence that we heard from, Russell Wilson, all having others that they're trying to protect.
And I get it, because like I said, football and baseball, they're going home every day. They're out in their communities every day where these other sports are in the bubble. And we haven't even gotten to the football part of, I'm very, very worried, and I know they're going to ramp up slowly, but injuries, man, soft tissue injuries that could occur and how long that could keep you out in this with this shortened type 48-day, 47-day ramp-up to the first game.
And I think that's why the players really want the workout portion of the ramp-up, non-padded right. practices, finally adding with ending pads, with yep. padded practices before you get to any of those other issues. A lot more to unpack on here, again, for the rest of this morning. We'll talk to Eric Winston about that. But speaking of important voices, one of the most prominent owners in sports has a message for Daniel Snyder. We'll get to that next. It's Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News.